From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the state's new education commissioner is getting some backlash over plans to quell the testing opt-out movement. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the new commissioner, and we'll take you to a protest in the Finger Lakes region over a coal-burning power plant. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The state education commissioner's plans to quell the testing opt-out movement is getting some backlash from some Republicans in the legislature, including a former teacher. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
At a recent conference held by the teachers group Educators for Excellence, State Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia says she plans to try to convince parents not to have their children repeat this year's boycott of standardized tests associated with the Common Core learning standards. Those opt-outs resulted in 20% of students statewide not taking the tests.
I think opt-out is something that is not reasonable.
Elia told the group that schools with very high opt-out rates are put at a disadvantage because they don't have the data to help children who may be struggling with specific learning skills. The commissioner says she hopes she can explain that to school leaders, teachers, and parents over the coming months, who she says might not be aware of that. Elia told Politico New York that she's putting together a toolkit to help school superintendents reverse the boycotts in their schools, and she's been talking to the education department's legal staff in order to provide the school administrators with more information on laws requiring that the exams be administered and taken. Those remarks set off some state lawmakers. Assemblyman Jim Tedisco spent a decade as a special education teacher in the Schenectady school system.
I call this the goon squad. We're going to take all these laws, bring the lawyers in to the administrative areas of these school districts, and enlighten the superintendents and the principals, and they're going to intimidate the parents now.
Assemblyman Bill Nojay, a Republican from the Rochester area who describes himself as libertarian-leaning, was never a teacher, but his mother was one. He says education officials should be listening to the parents instead.
I think the parents, the teachers, and the students have got more than enough information. They understand what the issues are. They've been fighting this issue and educating themselves on it for over a year now. They don't need somebody who's new to New York State to say, listen to me, I know better than you do.
A spokesman for Commissioner Elia says the toolkit has been misunderstood and that it will not be a means to coerce parents into having their children take the tests. It will instead be suggestions and information school superintendents can use to better inform parents about the value of the assessments. The materials might include, for example, a sample parent report to show parents the kind of feedback they'd receive if their children take the tests. Assemblyman Tedisco is the sponsor of a bill to allow parents to legally opt their children out of the tests. He says the larger issue is whether New York has become too reliant on the exams for students and to evaluate teachers.
What they want them to do is back off of these tests, use them as a diagnostic tool, but not as a tool to stigmatize kids or to stigmatize educators.
Assemblyman Nojay and Tedisco are in the minority in the assembly, where Democrats are in control. Many Democrats have also expressed concern about the tests, and Speaker Carl Hastie has said he won't judge parents who have their kids boycott the exams. The Democratic leader of the Senate, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, is also a former teacher. She voted against a budget bill that requires new teacher performance reviews to rely more heavily on standardized tests. Senator Stewart-Cousins, who has not taken a position on whether parents should opt their children out of the tests, spoke on the subject earlier this year.
It's sending a message. And hopefully, again, we will find ways to encourage the best of our teachers, the best in our students, and create an environment which is focusing on learning and not just chronic test taking.
Whether the boycott movement grows in the new school year or education officials can successfully talk parents out of opting out remains to be seen. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, this week you sat down with New York State's Education Commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, for a wide-ranging conversation, of course, about a number of things, Common Core, teacher evaluations, unions, politics involved in education, and even our Karen DeWitt this week doing a story on the State Education Commissioner's plans to quell the testing opt-out movement and it getting some backlash, including from another legislator you talk with regularly, Republican Jim Todisco, who doesn't like this pressure coming down.
Look, this woman has maybe one of the hardest jobs in the country. She comes into New York, and we know what's going on. We have a fierce charter school advocate in Governor Cuomo. We have Mayor de Blasio and his attitude for charter schools is, well, not so much. We have the Board of Regents, which is elected by the Assembly. I know it's elected by the Assembly and the Senate sitting together, but there are more assemblymen. So therefore, you have what we call the iron law of oligarchy, and the Speaker is the guy who's going to end up appointing the people to Regents' positions. And they are not always on the same page with the governor, that's for sure. So here comes this commissioner, and a lovely lady, and she has to sort of sit in the middle of this thing and try to hold the wolves off. If you take a circle and you see arrows coming from different directions to the circle, that's who she is. Well, she's got a pretty good way of dealing with it. She says it's all about the children. Let's remember the children. Let's not do the politics. But, of course, she knows, and we all know, that the politics is very real and there. We do know that governors, while they're not the regents, they can put tremendous pressure on the State Department of Education in terms of how much money they get, where they give it out, what the formulas are. So I'm glad I'm not her.
From state education to state politics, rather presidential politics that involve state figures, we see former governor of New York, George Pataki, has put his foot in the water. But we see that a normal ally of his, former New York U.S. Senator Alphonse D'Amato, has decided to back Ohio Governor John Kasich in the Republican primary.
Well, let's remember what D'Amato is now. He's a lobbyist. That's what he does. He makes his money, either advising people or look. George Pataki, I've said it before, I'm saying it again, George Pataki was not really George Pataki. He was George Pataki fronting for Al D'Amato and Al D'Amato's people like Xenia Mucha, who were very powerful people. Now he goes up and he's sitting there in that corner law office and he says, I was famous once. I was governor for 3 times. The fickle finger of fame has hit him. And he says, I was governor for 3 times. I could be president of the United States. I have all that executive ability. And he's not a bad sort. So he goes up there and he becomes a sort of liberal Republican in the right-wing crowd that's running for president. Nobody pays any attention to him. He's got 1% or less of the potential polling vote. They put him in the number 2 category of people who have to debate with each other. And he's still there. Good for him. He's pushing it. But you're right, David. The idea that Al D'Amato, and he was Al D'Amato's guy, would back somebody else like Kasich really is the ultimate slam.
One of the major issues in New York has to do with Wall Street and its impact on the state budget, and all things finance in New York and the world. And of course, we saw what happened with the Asian stock markets as a result of China and the devaluation of currency and the ripple effect around the world. Tom DiNapoli, who we were just talking about, tried to reassure New Yorkers that everything was okay. You spoke to Hugh Johnson, a well-known financial advisor and analyst, who said, stay in for the long term. But this really is a scary thing, and New York is somewhat dependent on some of this Wall Street money.
No question. As we speak, the market is already coming back. Everybody told us to keep our money where it was, and that's what so many people did. Foolish people took their losses and then tried to bail out altogether, And, you know, that is the worst thing that you can do at a time like this, we are told. However, you know, a guy like Tom DiNapoli runs all these pension plans, and they're invested heavily in equities and stocks. And, you know, if the stocks go up, as they've been doing, he's a hero. And if they go down, not so much. So he's a great guy, and his job is to hold on tight and hope it all comes back. The computerization of Wall Street is getting closer and closer to the point where you don't see a lot of people with bodies looking like an anthill running around and doing their business however they do it. And it'll all be on computer before too long. And that, of course, is not good for New York State, because New York State can tax it. And the more it gets to be, you know, one big computer, the more that that computer can be put anywhere, including the hated New Jersey.
Well, Saratoga Springs takes center stage this weekend. And before you think this is a frivolous topic, now, of course, New York has embraced gambling with casinos and OTB and other things like that. And we see that the hottest horse on the planet, American Pharoah, is already in Albany. Allen, he arrived with his companion pony, Smokey, get this, on Air Horse One, headed to Saratoga, where the Triple Crown winner is going to be at the Travers.
I love it. Air Horse One. So clever. Look, your point about gambling is deadly serious. It's a regressive tax. It's a stupid tax. Government needs the money, so they do it in a way which seems palatable. But we do know that many people gamble who can't. We do know that it's a very tough proposition to take people's money, many of whom just can't afford it. And yet this state and this country more and more are encouraging it. It's very sad.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartow. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A coal-burning power plant in New York's Finger Lakes region sparked protests in Albany this week when opponents gathered in hopes of derailing a plan that would enable the plant to burn natural gas as well. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The Cayuga Power Plant in Tompkins County has, since 2013, been seeking state approval to convert from coal to a cheaper alternative, natural gas, at a cost estimated to be in the millions, which would be subsidized over a 10-year period by utility customers. Former New York State Deputy Comptroller Tom Sanzillo co-authored an Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis report that finds the coal-to-gas conversion economically unviable and warns it would create a long-term drain on ratepayers while creating a fiscal challenge for the Lansing School District, the Town of Lansing, Tompkins County, and two service districts, which would amount to an annual loss of $1.8 million.
It's often we think that the best fix to energy solutions are always, you know, new power plants and new uses. We're actually looking at a transmission fix which would allow alternative existing power plants to supply the energy.
Sanzillo says the report found subsidizing the plant would do little to ensure the reliability of electric supplies in the Ithaca area. An Earth Justice attorney suggested New York cannot credibly claim to be a leader in renewable energy while propping up fossil fuel plants. Albany Assemblywoman Pat Fahey, a Democrat, joined rallygoers outside the Capitol Tuesday. She says subsidizing Cayuga would stymie efforts to promote renewable energy.
I think that these funds that would end up being used as a subsidy could be used to transition to renewable energies, especially the wind and solar. And I'm not insensitive to the need for the jobs and for the retraining of those workers. We absolutely need to do that. And I think putting those subsidies into some long-term retraining of workers as well in these fields, which, by the way, are also good jobs in wind and solar, would be a better investment in the long term. I do urge that the state not continue the subsidy and maintain our momentum as being a leader in clean energy.
David Alisea is an organizing representative with the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign, which champions clean energy transitions.
This would be the second plant that they'd bail out if it was approved. And we think it's really important that as the New York ramps up on renewable energy, as the governor makes these big commitments to tackle climate change, that he gets serious about coal and retiring these plants in a responsible way.
The Dunkirk coal plant in western New York was the first. WGRZ-TV in Buffalo reported Tuesday that NRG Energy has filed an application to close its Huntley Coal facility in Tonawanda by March and is leaning toward placing the Dunkirk conversion on hold due to a pending lawsuit filed by Entergy Corporation opposing the switch to gas. NRG expects the suit will go to trial, and litigation could take years to resolve. The jobs of 145 workers at the two plants hang in the balance. Meantime, plans submitted to the Public Service Commission call for the 60-year-old Cayuga facility to begin the new plan in 2017. The agency has received more than 12,000 comments to date. A PSC spokesman tells the Times Union a date for a decision hasn't been set, and until it is, comments will continue to be accepted.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The Adirondack Youth Climate Summit at the Wild Center in Tupper Lake, New York, were featured at a recent White House event on climate change education. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The White House launched the Climate Education and Literacy Initiative in 2014 to link students to science-based information on climate change. Last Thursday, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy hosted a back-to-school climate education summit in Washington. The keynote event was webcast and featured National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Administrator Catherine Sullivan.
Climate literacy and understanding of some of the dynamics of our planet and how it works and how that translates into impacts and consequences for families and communities and people, climate literacy is front and center in dealing with global issues.
Following her introductory speech, she sat down for a fireside chat. On stage with Sullivan and moderating the discussion was University of Vermont sophomore Gina Fiorelli.
How do you best reach audiences so that they understand what climate change is?
I tend to actually start with things they're interested in and care about and show how climate links to that.
Fiorelli has helped plan the Wild Center's Adirondack Youth Climate Summit and was named a champion of change for climate education and literacy by the White House in February. She says her generation will have to deal with the impacts of climate change.
There's definitely a lot of momentum happening right now, and it's great that we have the White House's support with our climate education initiative. They're also trying to help us build that momentum, and a big part of that is including students in the conversation, which is what the event was all about, and including other federal agencies like NOAA in the conversation, because really grassroots efforts are often quite effective, but also getting help from up above NOAA and some other federal agencies in the White House is really strengthening the movement.
The Adirondack Youth Climate Summit began in 2009. It was designated a project of distinction by the White House last December. Wild Center Director of Programs Jen Kretzer also attended the summit.
The Youth Climate Summit is really unique because it really asks students to step up into a youth leadership role. We are now working with communities across the U.S. to do youth summits. Currently, we're working with a group in Seattle, a group in Detroit, another group in southern New York State in the Catskills, continuing our work in Vermont, and we have other states that are interested in starting youth climate summits. So when you listen to youth talk and you participate in things like our youth climate summit event or the White House back-to-school climate education event, you really feel hopeful.
The White House Back-to-School Climate Education Summit was attended by nearly 200 students, educators, and scientists studying the impacts of climate change.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. as American Pharoah is set to race at the Traverse Stakes at Saratoga Racecourse this week. There's a new voice at the track. As the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard found out, much more goes into the job than just 2 minutes of action.
It's a long climb up to the announcer's booth at Saratoga Racecourse, and the man with the best view is announcer Larry Colmus.
Asia, Asia, an Iroquois girl, enchanted river.
In the middle of an August afternoon, Colmus is preparing for the day's fifth race, memorizing the runners trotting down the track to the starting gate on the far side of the course.
You know, these horses usually run every few weeks, so you don't see them that often, and there's so many different horses you have to remember every day. It's just, you know, it's like taking a test every half an hour, 10 times a day. And then by the end of the day, your brain is fried and you're ready to wait until the next day to have to do it again. Post time in 3 minutes.
There are plenty of things to memorize besides the horses' names. The jockeys each wear distinct silks corresponding to the owner. Colmus watches how the thoroughbreds move before a race. He uses a notepad and program to help keep track.
Also depends on what kind of a day you're having brain-wise.
At post time, Colmus snaps his attention from our chatting to the horses on the backstretch.
They're off. A slow start there for Iroquois Girl. It is Spark who fires out fast for the front. Lorican Disco on the outside goes with Spark early, and Asia is away running in third right behind them.
It's almost surreal to hear Colmus's voice up close from his small perch and not booming over the PA system. And in less than 2 minutes, it's all over.
Spark still there. Here's Spectacular Me. Spectacular Me runs by Spark. Late move from Dauphine Rouge. Spectacular Me won it. Dauphine Rouge got second, and then came Iroquois Girl.
Moments later, Colmus introduces the victor, now being celebrated in the winner's circle.
A 5-year-old gray roan mare by Katianis, out of Spectacular Morgan by Spectacular Bid.
He also reads off the payouts.
Exacta 6 and 5, 31.80, the double of 4 and 6, $138.
After he hangs up his headset, our interview continues. Colmus rarely bets on a horse, and even if there's a favored horse in the race, he says it's important to keep it professional.
Especially, you know, when everybody has a bet on every horse in the race. You know, you want to make sure every horse gets a call in the race and everyone gets their due.
Sure, but what about a superstar horse like American Pharoah?
You know, that's a scenario where it's a little different than just your ordinary race. Like when I called him, you know, winning the Triple Crown at Belmont, it was one of those scenarios where everyone there at the track, even if they made a bet on a different horse, everyone there was so excited that they got to see a horse win the Triple Crown. And to be able to call that race with American Pharoah was unbelievable, and it would be so great if he came here for the Traverse.
Of course, Colmus is a racing fan. It was while I was in the booth that I realized exactly 1 year ago I met Colmus at the news conference unveiling that he would become the New York announcer, replacing legendary caller Tom Durkin, who is now enjoying his first summer off in 24 years. Colmus has called some of the biggest races at the biggest tracks in the country, but ever since he was a kid, he dreamed of one day announcing at the Spa. Now, about halfway through his first season at Saratoga, Colmus says it's even better than he expected.
It's been unbelievable. It truly was something that I was looking forward to so much. You know, it was a year ago that I was named the new announcer in New York, but this finally came to be here at Saratoga at this meet, and I expected it to be great. It's just been beyond belief great. You know, just the atmosphere of this place, the crowds every day. There's so many people here every day. It's been tremendous.
And then Colmus turned his attention to the next race. Reporting from Saratoga Springs, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1535. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.